And one of the things about the shows we did a few weeks ago here and the shows that we've been doing this week is I always say God is the ultimate producer. And we did not think that our guests today, and I think it's so important that they appear on this show, we did not think they'd be available to us in person because, frankly, since they've landed in Israel, they've been pretty busy on some very important assignments, which we'll discuss. But somehow it worked out, and they're here live to speak to us about a very special category of volunteers who have come from 6,000 miles away to help our soldiers and help those in need, literally with their expertise in the field of medicine. And with that in mind, our good friend Dr. Steve Riesch, who is from New Jersey and has a lot of fans out there in the central New Jersey area and probably other places as well. He is actually sitting to my right in our temporary studio here in Jerusalem. A pleasure to welcome you to JM in the AM.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Might be your first appearance on JM in the AM, if I'm not
mistaken. First appearance. I think Ralph is upset that it wasn't previous.
Ralph's never going to live it down that he's not here for this, but hey, that's a totally different topic, Steve.
That's Ralph's problem.
That's his problem, is right. And you're joined, and I'm joined, and we're all joined by Dr. Joe Salama, who's not from New Jersey. He hails from Michigan.
That's correct.
And he is also on this incredible mission of helping soldiers and patients who are in need. Shalom, and a pleasure to welcome you.
Shalom. Thank you for having us.
Oh, are you kidding me? You have no idea how what kind of honor this is for us. And you're representing, by the way, is there an estimate? How many doctors have shown up in Israel from outside of Israel in the last 5 weeks? It's got to be. I mean, I met people at baggage claim who I knew, and I didn't realize that they had come on a mission like this. So, I mean, it's got to be a significant number that's already been doing this over the last few weeks.
Well, we came through APF. Right. I think let's preface. Sure. I was here on October 7th. I was on vacation here when
in what
war.
City? Where were you?
I was
you
in Jerusalem
for
Shabbat. Yeah, I was here. Right. I really wanted to see Simchat Torah at the Kotel. Right. Unfortunately, obviously, the war exploded, and I tried to volunteer at that point, and there was chaos, and I went back home, and as soon as this opened up, and I put my name on, and thank God that they, you know, doesn't matter what the schedule is, I'll come in.
Because we've been pointing out there are only certain specialties they're asking for, right? And
correct.
And the two of you are in the same area, and that is?
Orthopedic surgery.
And unfortunately, it's needed here so much, I'd have to assume, because any type of injury here likely needs some type of orthopedic expert, right?
Correct. A lot of the injuries are in the extremities,
right,
or in the spine. But, you know, there are so many physicians and nurses and firefighters and volunteers and farmers and cowboys who've really come to help. And certainly the Ministry of Health, the IDF, coordinated, vetted all the physicians, and I think the number in the Ministry of Health is over 5,000 doctors.
Wow.
Who've already put in all their information. And all of us, I think everybody in the United States feels a little helpless. What can we do? And beautiful for the rally yesterday.
All right. Very proud of everybody.
Extremely proud.
Your community was very prominent.
Absolutely.
There.
Very prominent. And I have to ask Joe to tell you a story of what happened with his brother.
Don't tell me he was on one of the Detroit flights.
No, my grandson, actually.
Was on one of those?
Yeah, and my brother-in-law, my grandson, goes to the Jewish academy, and he went to Hillel Day School and then Jewish academy. They had for that rally, they landed this private jet. Landed
in Washington.
In Washington. The bus drivers would not take them because they were Jews. And they had to go back. I mean, just an hour or two.
They called it a sit-out or like a sick-out.
Yeah, right. So they didn't take him. He was, you know, I mean, these are 14, 15-year-old kids that really, it's a peaceful rally. How can they not take this? This we were incensed.
Right. So they came all the way from Detroit, and they were precluded from coming to the rally for one reason.
Jewish.
Because they're Jews.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very frustrating to be in the United States and trying to see the moral equivalency. Nobody likes to see innocent people killed. But somehow when it's a Jewish person getting killed, well, then it's understandable.
Or being inconvenienced in a Detroit airplane.
Correct.
Then it's
so
all right.
They all took this private plane, and they got there. They couldn't. It was on a private tarmac. They couldn't get a bus. And apparently they left.
Yeah, they went
and
back.
That is unconscionable. And, you know, it was interesting because every time when we see a rally around the world, people are screaming, burning flags, kicking,
ripping
stepping,
down American flags.
Ripping right. American flags, burning them, ripping down kidnap signs. And when you looked yesterday, I was like, oh my God, we're such a nebuch of a population.
Well, or the opposite.
Right.
So value-driven.
We are so value-driven. And everyone's like, oh, they're not even burning anything. But we don't burn things. We are all here just like the doctors. And you should know that Joe and I volunteered to go down to the hospital in the Gaza.
Southern part of Israel.
Right. And in Gaza.
In Shifa. You were over the border?
No. We weren't.
Oh, you volunteered to do
we
that.
We volunteered to do that, right. To take the children and neonatal kids. And we volunteered to do that because for us, for all Jews, life is prime. And if you believe that death is your goal in life, there's never going to be an interrelationship.
Now, a couple of things. And we're speaking both with Dr. Steve Reich and Dr. Joe Salama. Salama,
it's fine. Salama.
Both of you have, I assume, very busy schedules in the United States. I assume you spent a couple of days just rearranging everything.
Yes.
Likely were then encouraged by the people you work with to go do this, right? I would assume. I hope.
Right. Well, I mean, we ran our practice. We had surgical elective surgery to do. I said, you know, cancel everything.
Right. Or move it a few
Or move
days.
It away. I have a couple of partners that took over some of the cases because you don't want to inconvenience too much of the patient.
No, but I hear that.
That this was imperative. This was first and foremost what we wanted.
The whole group we were with, I'm sorry.
Sure.
So we were three orthopedic surgeons. There was Barry Crozer, and he had to leave on Sunday night because all of the patients were delayed for the week. And for many of us, we were told previously we were going to come. So we cancel, mobilize our schedule, and then they say, oh, we're on standby. So then it's another 2 days. But this is the priority. You have a chance to help Am Yisrael, a chance that Israel should know that all Jews around the world, and especially in the United States, are here to support them. And it's not support. We're by their side. We don't want to be behind. We want to be right next to them or in front of them.
How busy have you been? A typical day, you're involved in what types of medical activities?
So we've been involved. We've had the tremendous pleasure of being with Professor Feinstone, who's taken us around. We've been to multiple hospitals. We've been to multiple military bases, and we've been seeing acute orthopedic injuries. We saw gunshot wounds this morning. We've seen shrapnel wounds. And we see the brave chayalim who are here. It's not just protecting Israel. This is protecting Jews every single place in the world.
Yep.
And it just happens to be here, and it just happens to be that Israel is the easiest target, but they're not going and protesting at the Israel embassy. They're going and protesting in front of synagogues. They're defacing synagogues. If your problem is with Israel, and everyone can have reasonable criticism, but that's not what this is. This is Jew hatred. And if we're alive, that's the problem. And we need to be here.
This is a message we always transmit to the soldiers, that they're protecting all of us. Sometimes they look at me like, what? Do you think we're protecting you for 1,000 miles away? I say, yeah, you don't get it, but you're really doing that. And now, does this move along the process? In other words, because you're here, are patients being able to be seen and then in turn be operated on at a quicker rate because you guys are in this country?
Well, there are a lot of issues internally, certainly on October 7th, the health system, there wasn't an awareness of all of the injured civilians coming to the hospital. And the hospitals, like Barzilai and on the south, were a bit overrun, and they didn't have enough nurses. They didn't have a general surgeon at the hospital. The orthopedic surgeons came in to help, and it was really a bit of a balagan. And as soon as the chayalim and doctors heard there were issues, they all left. They all came. Nobody said, I'll wait to see if anybody calls. We didn't run into one doctor, nurse, therapist, radiologist. Not a single person said, I'll wait and see if my phone rings. Everybody heard
and ran,
and they went. Ran. It was a, like a Nasevin Nishma. We'll go first, and then you'll tell us later. Yeah. And there were people who were driving, you know, said, oh, we're going up north, and then they heard the problem was in the south, and just made a U-turn.
Part of the reason that the both of you ran, because you,
oh, yeah,
you had to be
absolutely
part of that whole thing. Now, you have an interesting history, because
yes,
we're told you're originally from Egypt.
Yes, I am.
So, and I joked with you, of course, you know.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But tell us about this. I mean, how does a young guy from Egypt end
well,
up in...
you know, I wasn't a young guy. I left Egypt when I was 19 years old. I mean, it just, it became almost impossible.
Well, then you have fooled us, because you said that was before the Six-Day War.
Yes. So, we left. We were lucky.
The way you look, Dr. Salomo, we would not have guessed that. I thought you were more of a child than you were.
No, no, no. I'm not. I'm probably the oldest guy sitting around here. No, so it was almost impossible to stay and live in Egypt after, you know, since Nasser came in,
right,
and the Jewish population started to decline right, right after the 40, after the State of Israel, and then gradually in 52 after Nasser came in and the 56 war,
right,
and then gradually the Jewish population diminished and diminished to the point that it was almost intolerable to live in Egypt due to other situation. We left. And
your whole family left?
Yes.
And went where?
Went to Paris. My father had the insight to apply for a visa in the early 60s. So when he came to the United, to France in a transit visa, we got the visa to come to the United States.
And then you end up in Michigan at some point.
Yes, because we had relatives in Michigan. End up outside in Detroit, and then did my formal education in the United States.
I was going to say, so your medical training comes from
the United States.
And in Michigan.
Yes, I went to Wayne State University, both undergraduate and med school, and then right, I did my training also in Detroit.
Right. Now, when we say that they were looking for certain specialties, does that mean there's only two or three specialties that they would reach out to the United States, or there's 10 or 15?
Well, what they wanted first was orthopedic surgeon and dermatologist.
Those were the two.
The two that were in high demand. And obviously, for orthopedic surgery, it's, you know, extremity injuries.
Right.
And then dermatology. And we talked to our colleague that were here in dermatology. They had really a lot of problem because they're in their boots and they're sweating and they had a lot of issues. And they
stuff we never think about that they're
right,
going through.
Right. And they treated them. They were very busy, too.
You know, I think just to add that they have a list of all different types of physicians. They've a lot of, the largest demand is actually of psychiatry. There's a lot of acute trauma and post-traumatic stress disorders, even the timing and the precursors for that. And there's really been a tremendous need. There are a lot of needs for physiatrists. There are a lot of patients who we saw who are amputees above the knee, below the knee. And these are tremendous life-altering issues. And the emotional component beyond the physical component is really problematic. And they've had pathologists come. It was interesting that one of the bases we were at, they were going and retrieving the bodies from the massacre. And their goal was to take all the Jews. Well, what do you do with the terrorists? Their answer was, well, that's not our priority. And they ultimately said, you know what, we have to do something. And when they did genetic testing on all of these people who were killed, turns out 9 of them were Jews. So the people who were going to do the procurement and find these people who had died, and they were saying, why would we do this? Why would we give the kavod and respect to these people who died? Their greatest moment was seeing there were Jews. And for that, they were able to treat everybody with respect and be able to find out, to help to find out where everybody was. So there have been pathologists, there have been forensic people, and it's a fluid situation. So it's between the IDF and the Ministry of Health. And they'll say, we need this, we don't need that, here's when we need it, we thought we needed it, and it changes. And a lot of it is also, you know, when we were at Sheba Medical Center, at the trauma center, you know, they have over 2,100 beds. I mean, it's a huge facility. And coordinating what they need, and you're predicting what's going to happen. So a lot of the hospitals are stopping elective surgery, waiting
in
for emergencies. That's no different than what happened at 9/11
right,
at my hospital. We stopped all elective surgery. We waited for all the patients to come and none of them came.
Right.
And it was really catastrophic. So you have to have that disaster preparedness. And what they're doing is taking an inventory of each of the physicians. So rather than saying, hey, we need a doctor who can do plastic surgery, we need this surgeon, that surgeon, they have all of the information done in advance. So really, kudos to APF, a number of wonderful organizations to coordinate all of the backgrounds, licensing, medical school, graduation, postgraduate training, to make sure they're all available. And then when the IDF and Ministry of Health says we need them, then they can activate.
Because of both of yours experience and the number of years in the industry, I'm assuming that what you've done now with this whole episode has encouraged others to hop aboard. Am I right?
I think they probably look at us and maybe are envious of us, what we did. We had a tremendous experience. I'll tell you a story. At the Shiva Hospital, we're very impressed by the amount of the trauma that they saw and how they rescued individual. There was a young soldier, I guess, a commander, who got hit in the thigh, continued to fight. They put a tourniquet on. By the time he came to Shiba, he pleaded with the surgeon, please save my leg so I can break the glass under the chuppah. Okay, unfortunately, they couldn't save his leg, but he survived, and he's going to be able to break the glass under the chuppah. They told him that. So that was just incredibly what we saw. Your soldier, they want to go back. They want to go back as soon as they get fitted with it.
That commander who he's talking about was so impressive. The chairman of trauma said, we really waited too long to amputate his leg. We should have done it sooner. But we wanted to give him every chance. And it's very hard to be objective. You know what the book says of what you're supposed to be able to do. You know what your experience says. But when you see a brave commander who's there and his only request is to step on the glass under his chuppah is amazing. And it was just humbling. And there was one other brave chayal who sustained an amputation. And they brought all of the psychiatrists, all the therapists, the family, everyone to come and see him. And no one was able to really reach him. The soldier we're just talking to you about, the commander, went to go speak with him. And that was the only thing that brought this second soldier who had an amputation to realize that there was so much good left. And we don't take inventory of our body when it works well. And once you miss it, then we take inventory. But there's so much more than just our extremity. These are major life-changing injuries.
Yeah.
But the emotional toll is tremendous.
Did you see a lot of stuff you don't normally see in New Jersey?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the amount of, these were, a lot of the injuries were transections of sciatic nerves from gunshot wounds. There's the weapons that they used. They actually changed, the 223 shells and 5.56 were like in the M16, and they actually figured out how to open the chamber and to put more gunpowder and a larger load. So it's more like a 7.6 or 7.62, they said. So these bullets were actually able to pierce some of the vests, and which is really problematic. And, it was interesting because it wasn't that they decided to they decided to commit murder, mayhem, in a despicable barbaric display, barbaric, of subhumanistic behavior, and fighting, jumping out of holes, and beheading children. These are not human beings. These are people. There's nothing in the world that anyone would ever do to you or your family that would cause you to behead a child. And the things that the soldiers told us that they saw were beyond unconscionable. You would never do it no matter what.
Yep.
And the fact that they did really shows the depravity for life and how they concentrated on causing more damage. And it's very sad.
That's the way he put it. The chief of trauma is like either Genghis Khan or the Vikings. They create fear. There's no fear in Israel.
Medieval behavior.
Medieval behavior. Exactly. But there's no fear because the state of Israel will survive.
Oh, that we know. We have another set of very special guests standing by. So we're going to keep bringing to this audience people who are really experiencing everything we're talking about firsthand in one way, shape, or form. But before I let you go, you mentioned your experience with the Israeli Air Force, right? You were involved in some type of biomedical project. Was it? Explain to the audience what that was all about.
So the there's a company called Easy Aerial, and my son-in-law and daughter made Aliyah 9 years ago, and his commander was in the Advanced Drone Technology Division, and his wife got a PhD and a postdoc, and she came to the States to be a professor. So this company, Easy Aerial, and since 2017 we've been involved with, and it has drones in a box. So instead of an operator, the drone takes off, lands, charges, does its AI machine learning in the box, and it can be in the back of a pickup truck. And we have contracts with the U.S. Air Force, U.S. Navy, Marines, Army, Custom Border Protection, ATF. But one of our greatest accomplishments was the Gavul Chacham VeKetlani program, the Smart and Lethal Border. And on the easyaerial.com website, you can see on the lower left corner, the IDF released it. It was classified. They declassified it. And you could see these drones autonomously guarding the border. And the whole idea was a vision of an autonomous system. And we're only a small cog in that wheel of a command and control. But on the day of October 7th, the IDF had contacted us. They said there was an emergent need for the Kabul, for the bases. And our company in Brooklyn, New York, immediately shipped systems. We had recipients who had already paid for their systems from Germany and from Norway. And they said, Israel needs them more than we do. We'll go back in line. And we've been having a, we've been contacted by numerous divisions in the IDF to provide the situational awareness and eye in the sky. You can see 4 kilometers away. You can see exactly what someone's doing. And that kind of information enables Israel to see what's going on, to have that awareness, and to respond. So to be in the country and having those systems provide some of the security, very similar to the feeling of lobbying with AIPAC for Iron Dome.
Are you kidding me? And in many ways, a much more practical way to participate in the war activities.
Yeah, it's. I think it's everybody
doing their part. Right?
Everyone doing anything.
But you're involved
that
in a couple of things that are just remarkable. Frankly.
Thank God, you know it. Hashem puts us all in our own place.
I guess,
to do
but
what
you also have to have that vision that what you're doing can actually help, you know, the Jewish nation and Israel. So
you know, it's if Israel is in trouble, it's a complete existential threat, not just to Israel, it's to every Jew in the world.
The entire Jewish nation, no question about it. Dr. Salama, Toda Rabba.
Thank you.
How do we say thank you in Egyptian?
Shukran.
There you go. Shukran to you.
Shukran to you.
And what a pleasure meeting you.
Not a pleasure meeting you. Guys.
And you are heading also back tonight?
Yeah, we have it on the same flight, Stephen.
I think you're on my flight.
We're going to be right next to you, and then we can maybe we could broadcast from the plane.
Let me check with our producer. Apparently, my responsibilities are over at 4 p.m. I mean, you guys are available to Israel 24/7. You know, when it comes to me, I've got my limits, Steve.
Well, we all do everything we can, and it's really, you know, when people said, well, how was it? It is the most humbling thing to watch the Chayalim, to help the brave soldiers of the IDF. And these are our brothers and sisters and children and grandchildren and parents. And you know what? To be able to do, there's no limit. What and we're just, each one of us is thousands and thousands of physicians and all of the lay people in the world. And seeing how what everyone is doing, when we came here, people said, Sarah arranged for me to have, they brought shoes and sweatshirts and for the Chayalim. And everyone in the world wants to do everything because this is the center of our lives. Everyone thinks it's your job. That doesn't matter. Right. And this puts into clear, complete perspective what's important in life.
100%. I thank both of you so much. Dr. Steve Reich from New Jersey, Dr. Joe Salama of Michigan, both doctors who, among many others, as you pointed out, ran to Israel as quickly as possible in order to help out with their expertise in the field of orthopedics, orthopedic surgery. Am I leaving anything out? That's a good description.
Don't forget spine surgery.
And spine surgery as well. I don't want to shortchange anybody with their specialties. The Jewish would mothers wouldn't be happy.
Ralph would be.
And Ralph would be furious.
And he would really
be. Are
you
kidding me?
Oh, boy. He didn't mention spine surgery, so.
That's right. That would really be upset.
They'd
about
be upset.
That. Thank you, gentlemen. And
thank
God
you so
bless
much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And God bless you. More coming up. It is a Wednesday morning edition of JMAM Live from Jerusalem.